I was the kid in art class who could never stay in the lines, horrible at drawing and coloring. My sister used to be like so good at coloring, she would enter into those coloring book contests and win. And I was the kid that needed the paint by number because I never understood like color values and stuff. It's just not, I didn't get that. And so I needed someone to take me down like a very simple path and go, here's what you need to do. You need to make this blue. You need to make this green. And then the lines need to be very, very clear in order for me to get to the picture that the artist or the person that made the coloring book intended. And that's what we're going to talk about today, is that God has a direction and a desire for your life that is called His will. And it is so cool, it's so wonderful, it's so beautiful, that it's kind of like this paint by number. It's kind of like there's a lot of clarity where you go, okay, I know blue goes on 4. I know 7 has whatever color I throw on that, I think green originally. I know 5 is yellow. But then all the rest is kind of hard to understand, kind of difficult to wrap my head around, because there's a part of God's will that's really simple, really clear, really easy. And then there's a part of God's will when things happen that just don't seem like they would ever be part of His plan, where we go, God, what are you doing? And people for hundreds of years, thousands of years, have tried to take the will of God and break it down into something simple. And all I know is that if you are in this room today, then you care about the will of God. You care about His will. If you've ever asked the question, God, what do you want me to do? God, where do you want me to go? God, how do you want me to act? God, how do you want me to think? God, what do you want me to say? Then you care about God's will. If you've ever had a time in your life where you've gone, God, why did this happen? What's going on? Then you're asking an even grander question. God, what are you doing in the world that's bigger, that's difficult to understand, that's above me? It's another way of saying, what is God's will? And I believe that God has a desired path for every single one of us. And I also believe that God has this plan that's bigger than any one of our single paths. And so to take the will of God and break it down is just very, very difficult. And I just believe that every person should ask the question, God, what is your will? And try to chase it down. And so if God had a plan for your life, or if God had a picture for your life, or if God had a path for your life specifically, would you chase it down? Would you really want to know it, and would you really follow it? And I believe a lot of us in the room, obviously the answer to that question is yes. But I think if we're honest, one of the challenges of the will of God is that we're always in conflict with God's will and our will. And so during this series, I am going to try to take the will of God, something that's so big, something that's so vast, something that's so difficult to understand, and then something that is so infinite, like something that's so finite and small and individualized, and package all that together in 3 weeks. So for those of you that have studied heavy theology, maybe you went to seminary or you went to a Bible school or you grew up in church, I'm going to kind of ask you guys to just hang with me, because I'm going to oversimplify some of the things that have been studied and written about for a long, long time that you might go, he's missing a piece, and there's just no way that I can put all of this into 3 weeks. And then for those of you that are new to the will of God, I want to just show you that there's something amazing that God has for you, and that it's called His will, and that ultimately you want to go down that path, and I want to help you find that path. If I had to break down the will of God, I would do it into 2 parts, and I've kind of alluded to this, but just to oversimplify it, the first part, and as we've talked about in the series, paint by number, the wonderful will of God, there's a first part of God's will, and that is the path that He wants you to walk down. There's something wonderful that God has for every single person in this room. It's His will for your life. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. It's full of adventure. It's full of fun. It's full of crying. It's full of good. It's full of bad. And ultimately, it's this pathway that God wants you to walk down. And it's called wonderful. And some theologians might call the wonderful will of God the desired will of God. Kind of as if God was saying, like, hey, I have a path for you, and you can take it if you want, and I have shown you in so many different ways, I want you to go down this path. And if you go down this path, then your life will be wonderful. Another way to put the wonderful will of God is God's will
is the life he wants you to live. He has this wonderful will for you. It might be called his desired will, what he really wants you to do. It might be called his obvious will, something that he just kind of puts in front of us in different ways. One of the ways I'm going to talk about today and next week are ways that he puts the obvious will, his obvious desire for you to walk down the path that he wants you to walk down. And for some of us, we have to make that decision. Are we going to walk down that path? If you take the wonderful will of God or the desired will of God or the obvious will of God, hang with me, you might break it down into two different sections. The individual will of God and the moral will of God. Essentially, the will of God for every individual is somewhat different. He has a path that's specific to you. He has a specific picture that he wants you to move towards. He has a specific life that he's carved out for you to experience. And today, that's what I'm going to talk about. How do you find that specific individual path that God has for you? And then inside the wonderful will of God, you have the moral will of God, which is something that applies to every person in the room. So there's the individual will of God where it's like, here's a path I want you to go down. And then there's the moral will of God, which is basically no matter what path you go down, if it's your individual path or however you go through life, I want you to live a certain way. So the individual will might be, here's the direction I want you to go specifically. And then the moral will of God is, this is how I want you to live your life on that path. And God has communicated in so many ways the individual and the moral will of God for all of us, and that's what we're going to unpack over the first 2 weeks. And then the other part of God's will, which again is overly simplified, is the wild will of God. And this is the part that we don't understand. This is the part that's so big that we go, what in the world is happening? How could this be in God's will? Whenever something awful happens and you go, wait, if God is in control, how is this in his will? Then what you're doing is you're moving outside of the individual will of God and the moral will of God into this thing called the wild will of God or the mysterious will of God or the decreed will of God. Kind of the things that are going to happen that are so much bigger than us that for some reason at certain points in our path, from our perspective, we cannot understand what is going on. But if God is in control, and he is in control, and if he has a perfect will, and he does have a perfect will, that means sometimes things are going to happen that are bigger than us that are hard for us to understand. And in this series, we're really going to look at that week three, kind of how to survive inside the wild will of God, the things that are difficult, and how the wild will of God interacts with our individual path. And so all of that is to just take this amazing idea that God has a desired path for you to walk. He wants you to move towards something and try to get us to this place at the end of 3 weeks, where we are moving closer in our relationship with God. Now, I just one more time. You can study this in book after book after book, what is God's will? And ultimately, there's a bunch of different ways to say some really complex things. But when it comes down to it, there's a responsibility that is based upon what God has revealed to every single one of us that we have to kind of embrace. You have the wonderful will of God, and it's the revealed will of God, what he wants you to do. And then you have the wild will of God, and it's kind of the concealed will of God that slowly gets kind of unraveled in front of our very eyes. And that's something that we don't really have control over, and we get to experience like a roller coaster. But then over here, we have this path that he says, here, with what you know, with what I've shown you, here's the way to go. Without using illustrations, it's just going to be really difficult to understand the will of God. And so I just want to kind of oversimplify this even further. This circle right here represents the wild will of God. And ultimately, every single one of us, we live inside of this circle. And God is outside of time. He's outside of space. And he's outside of matter. You see, we know that because in Genesis, the very beginning of the scriptures, we hear these words. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And in that moment, what we see is that God is the creator of time, of space, and of matter. In the beginning. In the beginning of what? The beginning of God's life? No, the beginning of our life. God created time. Okay? We have time in here. God is outside of time. So in the beginning, God created the heavens. What's that? Space. All of space. You have space, and then you have matter, the heavens and the earth. God is outside of time. He's outside of space. He's outside of matter. And so he kind of looks from a distance. I'm not saying he's not intimately involved with every one of us, but he is outside of these things. And there are things happening as if this was a story being unfolded. He's the author of the story. If you ever were to read a book and go, hey, here's this story about this person. God is the one that wrote the book and wrote the characters in the story. And those characters have certain desires and certain pathways that they take. And you might say, if you really talk about the will of God, that those characters, if they're written by an author, don't have a choice. But ultimately, they have a certain desire that they're going to go after. And the author, once they create a being, is trying to stay true to the pathway of the person that they've created. And so in that, we kind of wade into the mystery that is the will of God and how much we make decisions versus how much God has predetermined the decisions that we make. And ultimately, I could just sit here and get your head spinning about what God's plan is and how it all comes together. But to simply put it, every single one of us, Yes, I love technology, not as much as you see. Still, I love technology. Okay, so what we have here is we have inside of God's will, we all have a path. And so this is the individual path. This is every one of us. We all kind of stand at the beginning of somewhere, and we move down a path. Isn't this fun? That person has a really long arm. And what it is when we're talking about the wonderful will of God, the individual will of God, the moral will of God, what you will find is that God, because he's outside of our path, that he ultimately can see something at the end of our path, a picture, if you will, of what your life can be if you were to walk down the path that he designed for you. And so every person in this room, God has a picture, a vision that he's placed for you if you were to walk down the path that he put in front of you. Oftentimes, though, what you see a lot of people stressing about their life and stressing about God's will for their life is there's some things that he's told us to do or a picture that he's shown us, and yet we still go our own way. And some of us might be at a point in our life where we didn't go down the path that God wanted for us, and we're kind of over here going, I don't know why I haven't experienced the picture that God has for me. And ultimately, at some point along this road, you could go, God, I want your picture for my life, and God can move the picture of his desired path and move it into your path and kind of redeem the decisions that you've made. But ultimately, God has a path. He has a picture for you in mind, and he wants you to follow that path. I want you to take a minute and just picture your life. Just picture. Do you believe that God has a picture for you? Maybe a vision, maybe some outcome on the end of things or during the process that is what he sees your life can be if you were to follow the direction and the path that he has for you. I have a couple, Joe and his fiance, that I'm getting ready to marry, and I was sitting down with them at their counseling, and they're both artists. She's actually, they're getting married in July, and she's actually making her own wedding dress. Whew. And he's an artist. They're both artists. And so I said, they both work at Abercrombie. I said, well, what do you draw? And he pulled out on this iPad, he pulled out a bunch of pictures. And I said, wow, I mean, this guy is really talented. And he showed me a picture. And I said, that is such a cool picture. I said, can I have that? I asked him. You never get what you want if you don't ask. Okay, so I'm like, can I have that picture? And he was like, sure, you can have it. And so I said, I really want that picture. That's a picture of something that really means a lot to my wife. And Mother's Day was coming up. And I thought if I get that picture, I could get it framed. And then we could put it, you know, we could give it to her for Mother's Day. And he was like, sure. And so underneath this morning is this picture that I saw at one point, and I asked him to give to me. And through the process, he was telling me that he was making this picture. And at one point at church, after I had asked for this picture, he walked up to me and he goes, He goes, hey, and this will sound weird to everybody right now, but like, just visualize this, and eventually we'll get to the end. I'll bring this all together. But him and his wife were having an argument about the picture that he was drawing, and she goes, this is a weird question, but do you want the tongue in or the tongue out? And I was like, whatever you guys want, man. But so they kind of had this argument about whether or not the tongue would be in, and that'll make sense later. But they started to tell me that, oh, we're working on this picture, and we have this picture for you. And I couldn't wait until they showed it to me. And so the whole time, there was a season between when they gave it to me and waiting for it, that I was visualizing what it was going to look like. And I believe that that's how God operates. I believe that God has a picture for you. I believe that God has a vision for you. And the difference between you seeing it and not seeing it is simply going, God, if you're outside of time, if you're outside of this whole world, if you're outside of space, time, matter, and you can see it all, and I'm just a rope on the Goodyear blimp, if that's all I am, would you tell me what path I'm supposed to go down, and would you take me and show me where that picture is and what it looks like? Because, man, if I knew that picture, God, then I would start to walk in that direction. And I would tell you right now that there are some things that God has revealed that we're going to look at over the next couple weeks. But the most powerful tool that God has used in my life to keep me on the path that he has for me, and he has the same thing for you, is a vision of where I'm supposed to end up. A vision of where I'm supposed to go. You see, when we did this series, Kevin sitting in the front row, and him and I kind of work on these images and these bumper videos together, and we knew we were going to do a picture, right? We're just, okay, let's make a picture. Let's do this thing called paint by number, because what we want to communicate is that with God's will, there's some clarity, and then there's a lot of kind of messy, wild things that don't make sense. And so we were like, we're going to make a picture. We were sat in a room. We just had this like creative moment where we're like, we're going to make something, and we're going to put it on the wall, and then we're going to throw paint in it. We're going to record it, and in slow motion makes everything cool. Let's see what happens. And as soon as we had that conversation, I had a picture in my head. It was like, it was a vision. I'm not trying to be weird. It was a vision in my head of like, there's going to be some really cool artistic expression as a result of this process. And because I had that picture in my head, I knew, hey, we got to take some steps. Let's go. I know where we got to go. We need to go to Home Depot, right? God didn't say go to Home Depot. God said, here's the picture. I'm using a metaphor. We had an idea and we had this picture, and it was like, okay, go to Home Depot. That's the first step. You understand, when you have the picture, it can help you understand the steps to get to the picture. So we went to Home Depot, and we're like, oh, we need 4x8 pieces of plywood or drywall, and that's white. We can throw paint on that. That'll look cool. And then we went to the aisle where they have the numbers for people's addresses, and we were like, oh, these numbers look cool. So we just picked them out. We just kind of went down this path all leading towards this picture. And then we went over to the paint aisle, and we were like, these are vibrant. This is vibrant. This is cool. This will be contrasting. And we just picked them all out. And we went to the office, and we set this thing up, and we got some music playing, and I went home and changed my clothes, and I just got in front of the camera and threw paint on this thing. And then we got this picture, this kind of really cool thing that says God has a picture for you. He has something wonderful for you, something specific, something that's clear. Red goes on one. It's that simple. Will you do it? And then a piece that's wild and mysterious that kind of blends with all the other colors. And what I believe is that God uses these mental pictures to communicate his will. Aristotle said it this way: the soul never thinks without a picture. The soul never thinks without a picture. And so today, can I move into some more ambiguous space in our spiritual journey? And that is to get our souls stirred up. To say, God, you know, I don't want you to just like write something down. I can read this in the scriptures, and we're going to talk about that next week. I am not minimizing that piece. That's a huge piece of it. But today is about what's going on in between the ears. What's going on in your heart, in your soul, as you trust and lean in to the God of the universe, who is the master artist, and to believe that he has a beautiful picture that he wants you to chase down for the rest of your life. And to go, God, I want a vision for my life. I want a vision. I want a picture, because if I have that, then I'm going to be able to start working towards that. And ultimately, the clearer the vision, the easier the decision. So God, if you would give me this somewhat direction here, then I know I'm going to be able to take the steps I need to take to get to it. And a great author put vision this way. He said, a vision is a personal burden that grows into a mental picture of the way things could be someday. Man, I don't want anyone to leave here today without having something happen between the ears and in their soul that no one else can see but them. A vision, a picture, some direction. Where is God leading you? What do you see? And ultimately, we're going to go through the process of discerning whether the thing that you see is from God or not. Because just because you see something doesn't mean it's from God. In fact, the scriptures would teach us, and we can see throughout time, that we all have a lot of images sometimes that are not from God. But if God occupies the space of leading people through their souls and through visuals, then man, if he's got a picture for your life, don't you want to see it? Because if you could, wouldn't you chase it down? I believe you would, especially if it's wonderful, and it is. The story that we're going to look at throughout this series is the story of a man named Joseph. And a lot of us have heard of Joseph, and we know the Broadway show Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat. And it's a beautiful story, and let me just kind of drop us into Genesis 37. And before I do that, can I just challenge everyone in this room that all the statistics, everything out there right now for those that are 30 and younger is saying that they are seeking something authentic, that they are looking for passion over polish, that people who are seeking after God are genuinely seeking after God. They want to know what God has to say. And if you really want to know what God has to say, you will not find it solely in a church or in a song or with a group of people. Where you're going to find the vast majority of what God has to say is right here in the scriptures, in a text that he orchestrated over thousands of years to bring people together to write stories about his character. And ultimately, and I'm going to say this next week, if you really want to know the will of God, you have to know the mind of God. And you will not know the mind of God until you know the word of God. And so in his word, he has narrative, he has story after story, he has imperatives, he has things that you have to do, he has things that other people did, he has all this stuff that weaves us into his brain. And ultimately, we get to see this picture from God. And in this story is nothing short of wonderful and beautiful. And it's been translated in a language that all of us can read and understand. And if you can't find a version that you don't understand, just keep searching. Because there's a way that it's been written where you can understand the heart of what God has to say. And you've got to be someone, if you really want to know God, then you've got to say, what has he given me? He's given me the text. Read the text. He's given us more, but he's given us that. It's so precious. The story of Joseph is beautiful. Ultimately, Joseph is the person who leads the Israelite people into a place called Egypt, where ultimately they become a grand nation, and God delivers them from the slavery of the Egyptians into the promised lands. Let me just drop it in. Here's the history of Genesis. God picks a man named Abraham, who's no one from nowhere, and he says, I'm going to make you a great nation. And then he promises him a son, and he doesn't have a son for a really long time. And then eventually God gives him this son named Isaac. He's so old when he has Isaac that they name him Isaac, which means laughter, because they can't believe he was born and they're that old. So then Isaac goes on and he has two kids, Jacob and Esau. Jacob grows up, and God, earlier in the book of Genesis, changes Jacob's name to Israel. And Israel has 12 sons, and one of his sons' name is Joseph. And Joseph is the one who eventually ends up in Egypt, and all the rest of the Israelites end up in Egypt, and then God uses Moses after 400 years to set those people free to the promised land, where they end up eventually in a place called Israel, where they build a temple, and they are today. And so Joseph is a pivotal part of this story of God kind of unraveling his plan for the nation of Israel. And what we see in the first part of Genesis 37 and 36 and 38, we see the story of Joseph, and I'm going to oversimplify it, but here's what happens. Joseph is the youngest of the sons. And so Israel, or Jacob, it says that he loves him. It says he loves him. He says he has a different relationship with him. It says that he's more fond of him. And he loves him so much that he gives him this beautiful coat. And so his brothers don't like him because they can tell that he's the favorite son and he got the best clothes. What happens is the older brothers have to go and work the fields. They have to go and do manual labor. And ultimately what we see in the text is that Joseph is kind of back with his dad hanging out. So it'd be kind of like this. It'd be kind of like if you were the son that the dad took to Nordstrom to buy the Cole Haan shoes, and then like the brothers were the ones repairing 270. Like that's the disparity here that we see with these different brothers. And ultimately, one time Joseph is with his brothers, and he's already annoying to them because he's got this beautiful like coat on, and he's more loved, they believe, and they're working really hard, and he goes up to them, and it's amazing what he does. He goes up and he says, "Guys, I had a dream. I had a vision." And they're like, "Whatever, man, tell us your dream." And he says, "I had this dream that we were all working in the field." And they're like, "Working in the field? We work in the field. You don't work in the field." He goes, "Oh, yeah, it gets better. We were all like working in the field. Essentially, we were like grain. And at some point in the dream, I stood tall, and all of you as pieces of grain, you bowed down to worship me." And they're like, "You say that again, and we're going to kill you." And ultimately, like, he communicated to them that he had a vision. He said, "Guys, I had this dream. And ultimately, like, I'm going to be some leader, and all of you guys are going to worship me." And they're like, "Say that again, and you're going to be..." And so you'd think that Joseph would kind of, like, not do that again, but he apparently goes to sleep, and he has another dream. And after hearing kind of his brother's angst, he decides, "I'm going to go back because God is giving me a vision. God is giving me a picture for my life." And he goes back to his brothers, and this is the interaction that you see in Genesis 37:9. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." And they're like, "Now we're definitely going to kill you." And ultimately, the sun, the moon, the stars are the leaders in what we now know is Egypt, and the brothers and the father that all eventually, towards the end of his life, bow down and worship him and express loyalty to him. Because what ends up happening after this is they're so frustrated with the vision that he's been given that they take him and they sell him into slavery, and then he gets kind of traded, and he ends up to be one of the lead officials in Egypt, goes through a crazy, wild experience where he for 10 years ends up in jail, and then ultimately he becomes the leader of all of Egypt. And at the end of the story, all of his brothers come back and worship him because he's the one that can save their lives in the midst of a famine. And so that's not where I'm taking us today. What I'm trying to show you is that God is in the business of using vision to show your direction. God has a path for you like he had for Joseph. He says, "Here's this path. You're going to walk down this path. This is where you're going to end up." And he had that for Joseph, and he walked down that path, and he experienced all that, and he did some things. We're going to talk about this process. But what I want to get from everyone today, and what I want everyone to experience, is this truth that God has a vision for you. He has a picture for you, and if you have that picture, it's going to help you walk towards that experience. And so this is our bottom line. It's not something that you remember. It's something that you pray. Could we all, from this day forward, start asking God to show us the picture he has for us? How different would your life be if you believed he has a picture? He's outside of time. He's outside of space. He can show it to you. If you ask him, he probably will. So what I want you guys to do right now is I just want you to say, God, give me a vision. Could you say it? Come on. No, come on. You got to say it loud. Yeah, like God, and it's not loud because you need to say it loud so God can hear you. He can hear you. It's loud because you got to say it loud because you got to believe that he has it for you. And then if God has a wonderful path for you to walk down and there's a picture at the end of it, don't you want that with all your heart? Let me just kind of break down for a minute when you ask God for this vision, what's going to happen when he starts to kind of turn on your soul and you start to think and see what God might have for you. This is kind of what happened with Joseph, and this is what happened with us if we ask God for vision. Vision consists of these things from God. The first one is critical, is a burden. And when I say burden, what I mean is it's not a burden if it's just something you want to do. It's a burden when it includes and incorporates and really at the center of it is the health and well-being of other people. Joseph's vision was this way. You see, at first glance, you might think God is just propping him up to be the leader and having his brothers worship him. But ultimately, what you find out is that God is putting him in a position of leadership to help save the nation of Israel, to bring life, to bring hope to a bunch of people who at the time when they actually come and bow down the sun, the moons, and the stars to him, when they actually do that, they are starving and they need him to have that vision. They needed him to do that. They needed him to be in that spot. And so he goes, God, you're going to make me this so that I can bring so much to the people around me. And if God starts to give you a vision, what you're going to know when it's his is that there's a burden in it for other people. There's a burden in it for someone that you care about. There's a burden in it for some people that are in need. There's a burden for your classmates. There's a burden where you just go, oh, I want to be a part of helping people. This is one of the calling cards of knowing that God is stirring something inside of you, is when you care about other people so much that it drives you down a path. One of the things that God will do is he'll give you a burden, and then he's going to give you some gifts. And he's going to like show you, like, I have equipped you to be able to help solve this thing. I have given you what you need to walk down this path and experience this picture. So it's gonna be to help people, and you're gonna look at that and you're gonna go, I can do that. I actually can sing that way, or I can say that thing, or I can use my skill that way. And you're gonna know that it's all gonna start to line up when it really helps other people, and then you have gifts that God has given you that help go down that road, and people are going to come around you, and they're going to go, oh, man, you're so good at that. And you're going to go, I'm glad I'm good at that because I'm supposed to use this to go down here and help these people. One of the things that the most challenging things about a vision that God gives us when we really seek after it is that it has little to no details at first, kind of like Joseph's, almost metaphorical, almost just like some blurry lines with some clarity. And then over time, as we hone in our burden and we hone in our skills, it becomes more and more clear. Now, I want to just share. This is a part where, you know, if I can step outside of maybe even like conventional communicating right now with this point, I don't believe that Joseph got a vision because he asked it. I believe that God used him and said, here's a vision for your life, here's a picture, here's what this is going to be. Sun, moon, stars, grain, this is where you're going to head. But I don't believe that that is only for him. I believe that every person God has a picture for. But I have to say that for me, Joel Kovacs, this is what God did in my life. And I've had times in my life where I've told people, like when I was 12, God gave me a burden. He gave me some gifts and very little detail. God gave me a burden and he gave me this vision to actually experience what I'm experiencing right this second, right now. To be in a room with people who are from families like mine, who have lots of heartache, lots of good, lots of struggles, lots of ups and downs, and to go, we need to all come together as a family. We need to laugh. We need to cry. We need to pursue God together, because if we follow Jesus together, then we're going to have the best life possible this side of eternity, because Jesus is the resurrection and the life. So Joel, go tell everyone about that. And God gave me that, I am not kidding, that vision, that picture when I was 12 years old. And I've had people tell me, like, that's not fair. That's not fair that God gave you that. Why hasn't he given it to me? And here, I don't know the answer to why he gave it to me. I wasn't at church going, God, give me a vision. He just dropped this thing inside my heart. And then over time, he started making it more clear. But I will tell you this, that God has a picture for every person's life. And if you really want to know it, I believe with all of my heart and soul that he will show it to you. If you allow him to stir you up from the inside, God, show me a picture. And if you use these things, kind of, what's a burden for other? What do I have in my tool belt to do it? And what are some of the things that will help me get started? I believe that for you guys. And in no way do I want to, you know, communicate that because you didn't have it dropped in your lap, that it's not legit. Seek after it. Ask yourself some questions. God, what would my life look like if I went down the path spiritually that you have for me? I want you to just start to pray, you know, out loud every night. God, give me vision. Give me vision spiritually. How is my soul supposed to interact with you? How is this supposed to look? What am I supposed to do with my life in a spiritual sense? What am I supposed to do relationally? God, give me vision for my marriage. What does it look like, God? Show me, because if you show me, then I'll know every single day if I'm taking the steps I need to take to get towards that picture. Professionally, and this is the one that so many of us, God, what am I supposed to do with my time? What am I supposed to do with my skills? But I want you to just go further, right? You know, you can be in industry, and you can be right in the center of God's desired will for your life. Because if you say, God, I'm going to use my professional, my prowess, my skills and my job to help other people and use my skills, I'm going to do that, then he's going to start to give you a vision that is so much bigger than 9 to 5, so much bigger than paychecks, so much bigger than having a, you know, a prominent name or a title. Ask God for vision professionally. Ask God for vision financially. I mean, have you asked God to provide financially? Probably. Have you asked God to give you more? Probably. But you know what the grandest thing you could ever do is ask God to give you vision for your finances. God, what do you want to see happen as a result of everything that comes my way? Show me what I'm supposed to do, and I'll do it. This is kind of how vision starts to happen. This is how we all start to interact with the will of God as with a picture. Everybody say this one more time. God, give me a vision. God, give me a vision. And see what happens when he starts to show you something. The other day, Joe, he walked up to me and he's like, hey man, I got that picture. And he handed me this. He's really good at drawing animals. And I saw it, and I said, I really want a giraffe. And apparently they went with the tongue out. I believe that God has something like this for every one of us. A picture. I believe he has it for you. I believe that he has kind of a frame in every area of your life, in your marriage, in your finances, in your relationships. I believe that God has something that he's drawn, that because he's outside of time, he can see that picture. And if you asked him, he'd go, here it is. Here it is. Go towards this. Go towards this. I mean, my goal today is to stir us up. How can we help more people? How can we make an impact? How can we use our gifts? How can we see what God has planned at the beginning of time play out in our lives? How can we be right in the middle of the wonderful will of God? He has it for me. He has it for you. Please come back the next 2 weeks as we're going to talk about the next two pieces to paint by number. It's going to be really fun. Let me pray for us. God, thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for this picture that you've put in front of us of the path you want us to walk down. God, give me vision. Please don't stop, God. Don't stop showing me what you want. Don't stop showing me where you want me to be. Don't stop showing me how you want relationships and all the pieces of my life to play together. God, I need that. When I have that, I'll start to take steps towards you every single day. God, we love you. We're here for you today. We actually want to know your will for our lives. So please show it to us in Jesus' name. Amen.